David D. Hard Knock Radio hanging out with you this afternoon. Over the past week, there's been a number of astonishing, for lack of a better word, incidents impacting the Muslim community, impacting folks who are on the front line for social justice. And we wanted to talk to somebody who has her finger on many of these things and is vigilantly fighting back. The executive director of CARE, the Council for American Islamic Relations, is Zahra Billo. She is with us this afternoon. And Zahra, when I first called you, I know you were traveling. We wanted to talk to you about this craziness that was going on up at the UC Berkeley campus where they cut these deals that nobody knew about and basically have adopted a definition of anti-Semitism, which equates criticizing Israel or Zionism with being anti-Semitic. And the fallout for that was removing all political art from Malcolm X to Martin Luther King to Dolores Huerta from the Ethnic Studies building or the Multicultural building on campus. So that's when we were reaching out to you. But since then, we've had sadly, the tragic incident in San Diego. And we have the city council here in Oakland passing a measure which they're going to have a contract with an organization that has a harsh reputation of particularly spying on Muslim communities and people coming from Muslim countries. So there's a lot to cover. And I'm glad that we have you here. I want to start off with your thoughts on what happened in San Diego, because a lot of people are jumping on that bandwagon and twisting and twisting a lot of the narratives around that. But from CARE's perspective, how do you see it, and what should we know that's not being reported?
Yeah, thanks so much for talking to me, Davey, and for everything that you do. I'm actually at the San Diego airport this morning. I flew in to attend the funerals. The attack on the Islamic Center of San Diego has left all of us grieving for the loss of three beautiful community members who made the ultimate sacrifice. But for Amin Abdullah calling in the active shooter to the school, this would have been so much worse. And him and Abdul Aziz and Nader courageously fought off the shooters at the cost of their own life. And so we're mourning them. The funeral location actually had to be moved to a bigger venue because local organizers are expecting just such a huge turnout. We're also anxious. We are a community that practices in congregation. We are in the holy days of Dhul-Hijjah. We will celebrate the Eid holiday next week. And so, as many of us prepare to go to mosques, mosque leaders and attendees are asking, how do we stay safe? Like, nobody ever thought this would happen, and then it did. And then we're angry because we have been sounding the alarm on Islamophobia for years. It's been horrible since the Israeli genocide in Gaza began in October 2023 and has only worsened since Donald Trump took office. These were
You go
two
ahead.
people influenced by everything they're hearing around them, everything they're reading on the internet, and they decided to take matters into their own hands. And again, they killed three people, Davey, but my worst nightmare is like what would have happened if those three hadn't been there to protect the rest of the school.
It seems like when there are attack on synagogues, all the stops are pulled. It's national news. Flags are, at half mast. Every politician that you can think of is speaking out against it. And a lot of times, laws or the proposal of laws get into action to stop that. And one would say, I understand that. We don't want mass shootings of anybody. But this is not the first time the Muslim community has suffered such losses. Folks have gone into mosque and Muslim place in Muslim communities and shot up or harmed or attempted to harm. And it's almost as if, well, maybe they kind of deserved it. Maybe we need to investigate them a little more. All the way down to some people would even suggest that this was even staged. How do we kind of parse this out? And I don't want to assume that everybody kind of understands the political ramifications the way that you do, or the way that we've entertained, conversations on these airwaves. It seems far-fetched, but I'm just in my mind, it's like, damn, this is not the first time this sort of calamity has happened. And yet it's almost as, let's treat it as business as usual and keep it moving.
You're absolutely right. Mosques have been under attack for many years, and we've seen record numbers on mosque attacks even in the last year. Minnesota, for example, has documented over three dozen. I think it may.
We lost you. You said 3 dozen. We lost you. Zara? No, what happened?
So can't touch
Minnesota.
it.
Yeah, that, sorry, there
Can't.
we go. We lost you. We lost
Oh,
you when you said Minnesota has documented 3 dozen.
sure. I can do it again. I
Yes, go ahead.
yeah.
Yeah, go
Davey,
ahead, please.
we've seen an unprecedented number of ongoing attacks on mosques. The state of Minnesota and Muslims in Minnesota, for example, have documented over 40 incidents in the last year or so. Everything from vandalism like breaking glass and graffiti.
In graffiti. I don't know why you're going in and out. Hello? Hello?
That's been happening. There have been
Zara,
shootings as
Zara,
well.
not
Yes.
to cut you off, what's happening is you're speaking and then you just disappear.
Oh,
Your voice
hold on a second.
is yeah.
That's so weird. My connection is steady. My head is moving, so let me see if that's doing it. But give me a second. Let me
Yeah.
try something. I think it's because I get animated and then I move my head around and then the
Oh.
AirPods get mad. I think that's the only because yeah, my connection is steady, so I don't like
Yeah,
I'm.
no, you sound good, and then you start off and then you'll say a couple of words and then you just disappeared.
One second, let's see. Okay, I will try to move less.
Okay.
Attacks on mosques have been ongoing for years. CARE in Minnesota, for example, has documented over 40 incidents in that state alone in just the last 1 year or so. And so what we know is that what was unfortunately steady has now also been increasing. And the attacks have ranged from armed protesters to broken windows, graffiti, religious books and materials being vandalized. My favorite is always people who attempt to like wrap the doors or door handles in bacon because they think that our skin burns when we touch it. I should clarify, it doesn't. We simply just don't eat pork bacon, but we don't have any
Right.
allergic reactions to it. And here's the thing, we've been sounding the alarm on this for a long time. And unfortunately, since Donald Trump took office, a lot of the government security funding that mosques had increasingly been turning to harden their facilities, to do assessments, to hire and train security, to build exit plans, and so on, has actually been severely restricted for Muslim organizations. And so various Trump administration officials have either talked about completely closing funding to Muslim institutions, or have implemented viewpoint-based assessments. So, do you support Palestine, right? Is often a litmus test for whether or not you're going to get through, and it never manifests that cleanly. But what we've been hearing from mosques is that, yeah, like we heard from a mosque just this week that they had been approved for funding. And they have repeatedly faced barriers now in completing their application and actually obtaining that funding. So they're like, what do we do? The government said we qualify, we were approved, and now we're waiting. The thing is,
You
but for
know,
the security at that mosque in San Diego on Monday, this would have been much worse.
yeah, and that's what's really scary. And as I said, the narratives that seem to come up have almost seemed to justify, you know, these sorts of attack. Well, look what they did in Palestine. And my response is like, not everybody in Gaza is Muslim. Let's start with that and move on from there. But with that being said,
Wait, and actually,
the
David, can I add in but here's the thing that we have been saying that I want to lift up in the Palestine context. We have been funding a live stream genocide for over 2 years. We have allowed Israel to go into Lebanon and Iran and indiscriminately kill Muslims, Christians, people of some faith or no faith at all. There was a synagogue in Iran that was bombed by Israel. There are Christians all over Lebanon that have been bombed, and of course, countless Muslims. And our government has funded it, enabled it, and like encouraged it, in fact, right? And so you've got, for example, Congress members like Chip Roy and Tommy Tuberville and Randy Fine, who are out here repeating language in support of genocide. And of course, a president that has continued to give it permission. And so to your first question about what isn't being talked about, what's not being talked about is that attacks like the one that we saw on Monday are inevitable. Because when we dehumanize people so much so that we're incinerating what's left of their villages, why wouldn't a 17 and a 19-year-old with access to weapons of mass destruction in their mom's house not take matters into their own hands?
Do you connect the incendiary rhetoric that led to these two teens doing what they did with the other mass attacks that we had, like, for example, in South Carolina with Dylann Roof, what we saw in Columbine 20 years ago, and a number of, you know, what happened in Uvalde just 2 years ago, where you have teens that are picking up a lot of, you know, language and then just saying, let me get a gun and let me go mass kill people. In other words, I'm connecting this to the mass school shootings and things like
Yes.
that that we have seen. And they're often reported in isolation versus what are our teens or what are folks consuming that lead to them to pick up a gun and then go after somebody who they deem the other. So today we're talking about Muslims, but you know, a couple of years ago we were talking about the Uvalde with Latinos, you know, or we were talking about black folks in South Carolina. This goes on and on.
You're absolutely right. And I think you lift up something that's also important here, which is that, Davey, this was an attack on a mosque and a school. At 11:30 a.m. on a Monday, the majority of people at the facilities were not there at that moment to pray. They were in class. The third victim, Brother Nadir, is someone who lived across the street from the mosque. And when he heard the gunshots, he ran over to protect the mosque, to protect the kids, and because his wife is a kindergarten teacher there. And so I say that to
Well,
say you're absolutely right to lift up that this was an attack on a mosque. It was an attack on a school. And it fits in the broader context of mass shootings as an endemic in our country. I know
yeah.
police are still investigating what happened and, you know, what the motivation was. I have read online in very limited sources that there has been some findings that they were motivated by white supremacist ideology. I have also read, again, unverified, that they were in part motivated by the Christchurch shooter in New Zealand several years ago. And that was another mass shooting at a mosque in New Zealand that killed quite a few more people, but that they had been reading about that shooter. Ultimately, we have many, many problems in our country. Anti-Muslim hate, like anti-Latino hate, like anti-Black hate, has been given carte blanche by this administration and members of Congress. Access to guns of this nature. I mean, David, they didn't walk in with like two little shotguns. Like they walked in with significant weaponry prepared to do damage, and they took them from their homes, right? Like that's a concern. And so it's just there's so much wrong here. And then they live streamed this. Like, why would they do that but for the possibility that they thought they had an audience?
Well, here's the thing, and this is not the first time somebody has done a mass shooting with live streaming.
Right.
The reason why I'm connecting the dots or trying to, we're talking with Zahra Brillo, who is the executive director of CARE, if you're just tuning in. We looked at this administration, we looked at Congress, but I'm going to say the other devil, if you want to complete this axis of evil, are the tech companies that have monitored, I mean, that have monetized these types of things. And like I tell folks, as I teach in my class, go on YouTube and type in O'Block out of Chicago and look at all the many documentaries that have shown up from people who don't even live in this country. Or you can punch in, I'm forgetting the guy's name, but there's several people that go around to really bad neighborhoods all around the world, put their cameras on there, and then they kind of, like we're here in, New Delhi, India, and look at how they're living. And they go to the
Oh,
worst
God.
neighborhoods and they start to, paint these narratives. And even right here locally, you have Bay Area State of Mind and Oakland State of Mind. All these platforms are monetized, and what they specialize in is showing a lot of the decadence. And so when I tell people to look at the O Block, where you have the gang situation in Chicago, you're seeing all kind of these mini documentaries from people who never been there. And you're going, well, why are they doing this? And how did they get this information? Then you realize, oh, wow, they got $10,000, $13,000, $15,000 for, for doing this. And so there's
For making
almost like an, in
dehumanizing content.
yeah, so there's almost like an incentive. And what happens is lots of people pick that up and then they feel justified and like, maybe I need to go to Chicago and, and become a law enforcement officer and then we can go get those gangs. Or I can become, radicalized and go get a gun and go shoot those Muslims because they're terrorists or we're being overrun by quote unquote illegal aliens. And, or we got these folks that are violating Christian values. So we need to go shoot up a gay nightclub, which has happened, right? So these things go on, and you can go on these platforms and talk about these other groups in such a negative way. But let me go on Facebook or any of these other things and say something like Free Palestine and watch how quickly, your content is pulled, how quickly you're demonetized, how quickly you're shut down, and the whole nine. And so I just want to kind of give and compare that contrast. This is big business. It's a $1 billion a year business, for this sort of thing. And that's something that we can't ignore because it goes beyond government official, but private citizens who are making a lot of money peddling this stuff.
You're absolutely right. What stays up versus what's taken down, which accounts are open, which are closed. And we know they're surveilling everything. So it's not as though they can, how many times can they believably say they missed it?
Yeah. They ain't missed nothing because they wrote a check, to
Yeah, no.
individuals. Well, this brings me to the other question, and then we do need to look at government officials and what have you, the banning of people coming in from other countries, Muslim countries. That happened during the first iteration of Donald Trump, and now it's kind of happening a second time. Where they want to look and say, well, if you went to Yemen or any of these places, we won't let you in the country. But alongside it is the recent adoption of the Cellbrite contract with OPD. So let's connect the dots with that. And what do we need to know about what Oakland is doing with respect? How's Oakland feeding into this madness?
It's such a good transition from the conversation about monetization to this. What we know is that the surveillance industry is capitalizing on all of the so-called fear that we live in, right? And so we have to watch traffic cameras, and we have to track license plates, and we have to be able to control cell phones in various situations. And so we're seeing contracts like this one that we'll talk about coming up across the country. And it's so hard to fight, Davey, because it's city by city. So we may beat it in Oakland, which we didn't, but like if we were to beat it in Oakland, we'd still need to fight it in Berkeley or fight it in Alameda. And so what we saw a couple of weeks ago was that Oakland Police Department is using technology provided by a company called Cellbrite. Cellbrite is an Israeli digital company, right? So like let's be, even before we say like what they're doing that's wrong, like let's talk about where they're from. They're a company that identifies with and is based in an apartheid state engaged in genocide that is known for treating Palestinians, or that is documented as treating Palestinians as second-class citizens. And the way they do that is through just incredibly invasive surveillance. Years ago, I would talk to people about how the same companies doing surveillance on the apartheid wall in Palestine were doing it, were bidding for those contracts on the US-Mexico border wall. And so we need to connect the dots. But basically, Oakland police have been using Cellbrite for a number of years. They're saying they need it for criminal investigations. They're saying that they used it on, let's see, more than 200 devices last year, and they said it was really important. Now, here's what's interesting to me. Okay, so the contract comes up for renewal, and the city waives the competitive bidding requirement. So, like, not only are they giving the contract, not only are they one, like, engaging in the surveillance, two, using a company based in Israel for it, they're also not allowing any competitive bidding. Like, why is Cellbrite getting special treatment? Over and over again, community members have spoken up to oppose the contract, to oppose the use of the technology, and the council disregarded all of that. Like, only
Yeah.
two of them voted to end it. Six of them
Yeah.
said, yeah, let's go for it. Like, what? Like, they're not paying attention. And this is in Oakland. So if they're not listening in Oakland, imagine how much worse it is in other places.
What do you think is behind them not listening? And by the way, shout out to Carol Fife for being one of those people to stand up against this. But what's the rationale from your estimation?
Shout out to Carol. She's so consistent and such a champion, and we need to always make sure we lift her up. And so thank you, Carol. The why is I could think of so many whys, right? It's easy. It's neighbors are saying they're scared of certain things, and so can we alleviate their fears? It's already in place. Like police requests for these types of contract are so rarely challenged. And city leaders will sometimes say, well, we have controls in place to prevent abuse. Unfortunately, incident after incident shows us that controls in place do not stop abuse. What's heartbreaking about this is that Oakland is otherwise a great city. It's progressive. It's having conversations about ceasefire, about divestment. And here we are still like two steps forward, one step back.
Makes me wonder. We talk about this this sort of technology, and then you start to look at places where it's used. You could find it in places in, say, like Ohio, right? Columbus, Oklahoma City, various places throughout Texas. Those places, go ahead, Google it if you don't believe me. Those places are still complaining about crime. They're still saying we need more. So I'm asking, where's the downturn in this? You got this technology, have things. Are things going to miraculously get better? With the tangible evidence, I haven't seen that. I mean, LA has it. And, well, at least they have flock cameras and what have you. Have things improved? You wouldn't think so by the rhetoric that's being espoused during the mayoral race.
And it's like, I'm so glad you mentioned Flock, right? Because that's the other technology we're fighting
Yeah.
city by city. It's this, Davey, it's like we're existing in this regime where every week a new company pops up with some flashy technology, some nefarious intentions, some very problematic relationships, and sells a pipe dream to the city, right? Like, hey, like buy us and we will reduce crime. Well, crime's not going down from this. And we are not safer just because the police can see every move at every corner or can control our cell phones. Like that is all moving us in a direction that I don't think we want to or should want to be going in, where private corporations have access to all of our data and they sell it to governments and government agencies. And then we just trust that they won't share it or that bad actors won't access it. And we've, by the way, seen this with Flock, right? Where I believe it was the city of Mountain View actually canceled their contract with Flock once they learned that ICE had accessed the data. Because promise me all you want that you won't. If it's there, I don't trust that you won't.
Yeah.
I can't take your word for it.
And it's interesting to note that with this sort of technology, once the toothpaste is out the tube, it's hard to put back in, and then you get people like Larry Ellison, who's bought up all these media properties and film studios. He's a main champion. He's been one to say, yeah, we need mass surveillance because it will get everybody to act on their best behavior. And I think what you just described, what was going on in San Diego, you didn't have to have surveillance. They surveilled themselves. They're like, let's go live stream. Did it
Oh my
stop their
gosh.
behavior? Did it deter them? Absolutely not. It was like, let me do this. Maybe, for whatever reason, I'm going to get props. I'm going to get accolades. Maybe I might even get money, if we get away. So it just seems like people play to the camera more than they are deterred by it, which is just crazy to me, that we are going down this direction and not turning things around. Zara, as we kind of wrap up, I want to close out with what was going on in Berkeley. So this is a trifecta. You have mass shootings, you have, mass surveillance, and now we have these mass capitulation by universities like Berkeley to adapt the definition of anti-Semitism, which makes it almost impossible for you to criticize Israel and what they're doing. How do we deal with that, and how has CARE looked at this situation?
Oh, we've been really concerned by the promulgation of what is referred to as the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism. Even its own original drafters have criticized it for how it has been weaponized to label critique of the state of Israel as anti-Semitic. To be clear, it is not anti-Semitic to criticize a government, no matter what the government is doing, but especially in a moment where that government is engaged in a live stream genocide funded by all of us as American taxpayers. And so, as that definition has been adopted more and more broadly and has been debated at UC Berkeley, and UC Berkeley has come under repeated attack by pro-Israel groups, pro-Israel students, and right-wingers as well. And by the way, many of these universities are operating under fear that the Trump administration is going to cut their funding if they misstep. And so, in that context, UC Berkeley has been allegedly has been raising concerns about students. UC Berkeley administrators have been raising concerns about students saying that they feel unwelcome in some of these spaces. And the way unwelcome is being resolved or is being explained and then resolved is through the censorship of pro-Palestinian artwork.
Right.
What is,
So
they're saying
people
it's
are saying,
hostile.
so people are saying it's hostile if you wear, the scarf. They're saying it's hostile if you walk in a place and it says Free Palestine. Some places they're saying it's hostile if you even mention Palestine because they don't say Palestine. They always say Arabs. They never want to recognize that. And so it's a really, that's like me saying I feel violated if I see you wearing a hijab. I don't know. I just feel like, something's going on here. I mean, it gets that ridiculous. But here we are getting this codified in law with, folks who are taking our tax dollars. This ain't private universities, Cal Berkeley, or none of that. This is our tax dollars being used to misdefine a way in which people critique governments all around the world. If your government is doing wrong, we get to critique it, whether it's here in the US, whether it's, next door, up north, or around the world. But here we're making some sort of special exception where Israel can't be criticized, at least, on the
Well, and we
Eastern
don't
Berkeley
do
and other
it,
campuses. Yeah.
and we don't censor victims. We don't censor messages of solidarity with other victims, right? So you don't see this kind of pushback around the Ukrainian flag or free Ukraine. You don't see this kind of pushback around free Sudan. It is specifically Palestinian victims of a genocide, survivors of a genocide, who are being told that they cannot critique the very government that is murdering them. Not only that, they cannot advocate for their own safety and freedom. That's the position that UC Berkeley is taking, that is leading to a multicultural center that unfortunately doesn't feel multicultural at all.
Yeah. If you can put on your lawyer hat, your executive director hat, Zara, below, where do we go from here? What would you like people listening to do?
On all three things, let's say to start, I hope people will continue to speak out for Palestine. As I do this interview, I'm sitting in an airport wearing my keffiyeh proudly, because don't you dare tell me I don't have a First Amendment right to speak out against genocide. With respect to surveillance technology and local city councils, it's a city by city fight at this point. And so it's really important that listeners are actually looking at their city council agendas, that they know who the Carol Fifes in their cities are, and that they're in touch with and engaging them, so that when these debates come to their councils, that they can mobilize opposition in support, opposition to these nefarious contracts. And then with regard to San Diego, we continue to grieve the three men who were martyred. There are fundraising efforts to support their surviving families and other victims who will for sure be processing trauma around this for years to come. And so people should contribute. And we also invite, messages of solidarity. Speak out in support of the local Muslim community. Stop by the mosque. Send them an email or a tweet or even just a voicemail that says that you see them, that you're their neighbor, and that you care, and that you condemn what happened in San Diego. The other side is violent. They are organized and they are loud, but we have heart, sincerity, and confidence on our side. And so I'm hopeful, even in a week like this.
Zara below, we appreciate you taking time out, and I want to remind people, I'm going to give you two cities to check out, because these cities are often touted as the most crime-ridden cities in America, right? St. Louis and Memphis. You know what they use in St. Louis and Memphis? They use Flock and they use Cellbite. The police use Cellbite all throughout the Memphis Police Department since 2020. Okay, so see how safe those cities are, according to the stats and according to the rhetoric and according to what people say. And I'll just leave it at that. Last I checked, these were number one and two as the quote unquote most violent and crime-ridden cities. And I don't like to label an entire city and a community that way, but since we're going by folks who like to pull up the stats, well, we'll pull up the stats. So you have a city that's been using it since 2020. Has much changed? So what makes you think it's going to change here? We do know that Memphis is under a large contingent of ICE. ICE is there every day, and even then, it's not quote unquote safe. So it sounds like a good excuse to make some people money. And maybe satisfy some other, agenda that is yet to unfold. But it certainly isn't keeping these places in a position where crime has massively decreased, at least in those two cities. I'll just leave it at that. We're going to take a break here on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back. Are you there? Did I lose you?
Nope, I'm still here.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Of
Appreciate it.
course. Thank you.
You're
Sorry
welcome.
about the scheduling drama this time, but always good talking to you.
Okay. And, good luck with everything today. Stay safe, okay?
Thank you. Thank you, Davey. Talk soon. Bye.
Bye-bye.